You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC with your host, Dirk Norris.
Welcome. New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio is brought to you by the generosity of Hutton Broadcasting. New Mexico Filmworks is a program of the New Mexico State Film Office, and I am your host, Dirk Norris. Later in the show, Amy Brustra will join me to talk about her documentary, Young Ancestors. But now in the studio, I have Christina McCandless to talk about her film From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe. Christina's first experimented with film camera during high school, back in the days of celluloid. I like that. Life's detours led her toward an advertising career, earning an MBA at the University of California, Berkeley, toying with historic preservation and doing time as a commercial banker before her entrepreneurship, building a premier wholesale seafood business in San Francisco. Her search for the perfect aesthetic and affordable housing led her to New Mexico, where she rediscovered her passion for filmmaking while producing work-related videos during her tenure in economic development. Always fascinated by the eccentricities of the entrepreneurs she worked with over 20 years, she now tells their stories with video. Her 2010 award-winning video short documentary, Marblesmith, traveled to Southwest 2010-2011 Film Festival Circuit. Christine is a graduate of the College of Santa Fe Documentary Studies Certificate Program and was a National Association of Latino Independent Producers 2010 Latino Producers Academy Fellow, with her current feature-length documentary From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe. In 2010, From Zimbabwe received the New Mexico Film Office New Visions Contract Award funding and was recently premiered at the screen in Santa Fe. Welcome, Christina. Oh
my gosh, thank you, Dirk.
You've done a lot. How long have you been here in New Mexico?
20 years.
20 years. Mm-hmm. And living not in Santa Fe, but...
Yeah, we built a house out in Medinalis, which is the blue-collar suburb of Abiquiu.
Right. How did you make this transition from being an entrepreneur? And, well, first, let me ask you about your seafood business because of the, you know, plethora of seafood in New Mexico. and coming from Florida for a time and, you know, getting really fresh seafood, that must have been fun.
Well,
it wasn't fun.
No, I was ready to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a desert person, not an ocean person.
Mm-hmm.
I love seafood. I love the business. It was like the best job I ever had, barring filmmaking. But, you know, it's always time to leave and move on.
So. Fresh seafood is like homegrown tomatoes. There's just nothing like it.
Yeah, nothing like it. But there are actually a couple stores that do have really good seafood. So knowing seafood as I do, I know what's fresh and what to buy and what's in season, and I can get it here. You can get anything in New Mexico. It's a perfect place.
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about New Mexico. So you made this transition from kind of business to making movies about business. And how did that occur?
I worked at the Regional Development Corporation, which is the premier economic development organization in northern New Mexico, for about 8 years. And toward the end of that time, I started adding a documentary component to all the major projects that we were managing. And at the end of the project, then we would have a film diary of what we'd done. Mm-hmm. And in one of those, one of the filmmakers I used was just amazing and took me on more as a student rather than employer. And taught me the ropes. And at that point, I just knew I had to do that. So the College of Santa Fe at the time was mm-hmm. doing the certificate program, quit my job, started doing that, and I haven't looked back. And that was 5 years ago.
And when was the last time you shot with celluloid?
I'm not even going to say that. Okay. That'd be too embarrassing.
We have mentioned from time to time the terminology that's being used now is a little bit archaic and perhaps needs to change, or there's a heartfelt necessity to keep the word film in more generic sense than a practical sense, I think.
Well, it has, you know, that cachet.
Yeah, right.
Cred, street creds are film. Yeah. Video, that's the kid on the skateboard at the corner of the street.
Yeah, right. That's that's the cat crawling up the curtains, right?
But I must say, I have worked with award-winning cinematographers. Mm. Video
right.
is what we're doing.
Right. So, how did you get inspired to do From Zimbabwe?
Totally by accident. Mm-hmm. I was just finishing the certificate program. I volunteered at the folk art market one day. I met a woman named Jane Parsons, who was from Zimbabwe, who was an intern at the market, learning how to put markets together so she could do it in Southern Africa. She saw my camera, she started talking, and within a week we had a treatment for From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe.
Wow.
And the reason we had that treatment so quickly was that was back in the days when the New Mexico Film Office had the New Visions Contract Award every year,
mm-hmm.
and the deadline was coming up. And I thought, well, let's just run it by and see what happens. So we quickly put that treatment together, and those were the days where you only needed two pages.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe came out in the top six. The top five got the money, and we were the alternate in case anybody dropped dead.
Right.
We'd get their money. But that showed me that story perhaps had some legs, and we needed to move forward with it. And so because we shot it in real time over 18 months, we just plowed ahead without funding. We just kept moving. And eventually the next year, actually in 2010, we did get the New Visions Award, and it helped us finish off our editing. It was a godsend.
Right. Where did your funding come from before that?
What do they call it? Producer's cash.
Ah.
Friends, family, neighbors, right. anybody you can extort into giving you money.
yeah, right.
And there were a couple grants that we got along the way.
Did you use Kickstarter at all? Or
we used Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, right.
And yeah, we had a 6-week campaign early on before mm-hmm. they were organized. So it was a bit of a nightmare, but we made our goal in mm-hmm. the 6 weeks. So that was very valuable.
I think that's a terrific avenue for filmmakers to use crowdfunding in that way. There was, I don't know, kind of some talk about that your film could get lost in the, you know, thousands of projects that are now up there. And, you know, back when there were just tens or maybe 100, it was easy to be found. But I don't think you get lost because you're dealing with a group of people you already know, or you have a kind of a niche that you're trying to fill, you have a following, something like that. So people find you and they're willing to support you.
Yeah, and anybody who's serious about doing films these days, you start, because the whole paradigm on distribution has changed,
right.
you start developing your audience pre-film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at doing a new film now, and I've already started developing my audience, and we won't get serious about this for another year, but mm-hmm. I'm going to do it that way, because when it comes time to do an Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign, you've got several hundred people on your mailing list.
Right. So how are you developing this audience? And does that come from your business background?
It could.
Yeah.
I've been talking about this particular topic for the almost as long as I've been doing From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe. It's another woman-centered film. But this one on sort of a broader international scale. And a lot of women who are interested in Zimbabwe, I've talked about this topic to see if there was any interest for it,
mm-hmm.
and they're very interested in it, and so those women are on my mailing list. And I had sort of my first interview with a potential subject this Monday, and I said, "May I use this to share this with our audience?"
Right.
And she was a little shocked. "You've got an audience, all right? Yeah. And you're just talking to me about this, and we're..."
yeah.
But that's the way you've got to be now.
Right, right. Tell us a little bit about, for the listeners that don't know about the New Visions program, what does that program entail?
Is it still around, Dirk?
It's not gone away. It's kind of dormant right now, and we are hoping to bring it back if we can find investigating funding resources, alternative funding resources. But certainly, because of the popularity of it and the importance of it, we want to continue it.
Yeah, it made all the difference in the world, especially in the beginning. I don't think I would have started. I may have let this project sort of fade away if I didn't think, if the credibility that just getting that alternate position in the grant cycle had given me that encouragement and that sense of security that this was a decent film. Though it's just what it is you actually have to work for that money. The state was not giving me any money. Right. And I spent a semester at El Rito Elementary School teaching video to the sixth grade class. And then they made their own videos, and then I made a little documentary video of them making their videos. And it was an amazing experience for me. It took enormous amounts of time.
Yeah.
So the state got its payoff in my film, but it also got its payoff in teaching 30 kids in El Rito how to do video and introducing them to video as career.
And that service agreement, that community service, was an agreement that you kind of hashed out with the film office, and that's done like on a one-to-one basis, you suggest?
Pretty much. That you have to go in with the application pretty clearly describing what you want to do.
Right.
And then they just go back and put that into contract language and make you do that.
Terrific. We have Christina McCandless in the studio. We're talking about her film From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe, as well as seafood. And you're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back in just a minute. Back, and you're listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. My guest is Christina McCandless, director of Zimbabwe to Santa Fe. And you've already had a screening. I went to see it, and lo and behold, not only was it sold out, but there was like 100 people on. They couldn't get in. And I say congratulations. I know that was kind of upsetting that not everybody could get in to see it.
Well, it was a shock. I was in shock for 3 days after that. I had all the people who've contributed to the film, they got freebies, and some of them didn't get in, and that was really embarrassing.
Oh.
Then there were the people that came up from Albuquerque and didn't get in, and that was embarrassing. So half of me was horrified, and the other half was just overwhelmed. But you know what the amazing part was? At the end, there was this spontaneous standing ovation, which that was a shock. Because, I've been in places where some folks, and it kind of peters up where everybody stands.
Right, right.
But this was, people jumped out of their seat and started clapping. And, you know, my film is kind of, it's a sweet, happy, joyful film. It's not, there's no major call to action. There's no war, violence, rape, incest, AIDS, starvation. And I just didn't expect that kind of response.
Oh, because there's no explosions?
It's just a sweet little make you feel good film, and some people cry because it's kind of tear-jerky in points. But that was huge.
Well, with that kind of response, I mean, talk about validation. you had a Q&A afterwards. Were there any questions that you didn't anticipate or that you got that kind of caught you off guard?
Everybody was really focused. I did have two of the heroines with me because it was Folk Art Market Week, and the film is about artists coming to Folk Art Market. All the questions went to them, and about the movies about their journey. So it was a little more detail about what did you do here, what did you do there. What was great was Matron, who's one of the main heroines. When we started filming practically 4 years ago, she was very shy about speaking English, and she had no problem answering these questions in a very sophisticated English, and that just makes you feel so proud.
Oh, yeah. So how were these women identified at the beginning? And like you said, this was a kind of a four-year process, a four-year project. When you first made contact with the person at the Folk Art Festival, did she already know the women that she wanted?
She knew the communities. Mm. Jane is like the crafts impresario for Zimbabwe or in Zimbabwe. She knows all of the villages, all the crafts they're doing. She knows what level there are, how much they can produce. And so when we talked about this, I was like, well, we need villages that have not applied to the folk art market, because my hypothesis at the time was, let's film this entire process from deciding whether they're going to come to the market to all the way at the end. Hopefully we will choose villages that make it. We had no guarantee when we started this. And then at the end, let's go back 6 months afterwards and see what impact the market had on the villages.
And obviously these are artisans in folk art villages, folk art artists.
And they just happened to be, the two communities we picked were basket makers. Mm-hmm. So that's how it happened. There were a few. She went beforehand and did all of the political stuff she had to do, not only with her government, because as you know, it's a dictatorship and you don't have freedom of press, freedom of speech there. So we had to really be working in harmony with some of the departments in the government. And then we had to get permission from the communities, the headmen or the chiefs of the communities, to have us come in and film for 2 years, because the filming scope was about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they had to like give us total freedom.
Right.
And she did that. And that's how the villages were selected for us to use. And we started out not knowing how far they'd get along in the process, if they'd get into the market. Mm-hmm. And then once they got into the market, where they were approved by the market as vendors, if they'd come to New Mexico. So for us, we were on pins and needles the whole time. Is it going to fall apart now? And every time there was a shoot where they would go out and film in these communities, there was some soap opera going on. And it became a joke to me. It became kind of like the Spanish novella. Oh, what catastrophe are we going to be facing this week? Whether or not this thing was actually going to come together was a question mark till the very, very end.
Well, that makes good movie making too.
Yeah, and a lot of ulcers too. In fact, our last shoot, which was a year and a half ago, everything was planned. I flew over three times to do major shoots during mm-hmm. major milestones, and the closeout. I flew over to do the shoot on the closeout of the deal, and we got a call as we're driving to Masendu, one of the villages. We're not going to get to, and I had planned on spending 5 days there mm-hmm. because I had made friends with these folks and loved spending time there. And we were not going to get into the village. We were not being allowed into the village. And I was like, what? We're on our way there. What do we do now?
Right.
We need to have our final interviews with the artists at a minimum. And I had this huge long shot list because we were halfway through the editing process at that point. And so it was like all the pickup shots.
Right.
Well, what we got was about a four-hour interview at the closest town. They came out of the village, and we interviewed the two artists and some of the elders who came. But I never got to go back to the village, which was extremely disappointing.
Yeah. And what was the reason for?
Political. They were having a political rally with some of the opposition party over the weekend that we were going to come and shoot. And they felt that it was inappropriate to have white people, or non-native people, I really should say, in the village during the time of this rally. It would look questionable.
For the actual filming part, what was the biggest challenge?
Directing over the internet,
over
email. We had about 12 shoots, and where they would, Jane and Heaton, the cinematographer, would go out with a small crew to each community and shoot what they needed to shoot. And I had to be not only prepared with a shot list, but I had to put myself in the place and try to anticipate what might happen.
Wow.
And come up with a shot list for what might happen, just in case, because... Yeah, and sometimes we hit it, and sometimes we didn't. So, it made editing a real challenge.
It's the joy of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Christina, you are going to, you're offering an encore presentation of the film. Where, when, how can people see
it? Encore presentation, thanks to the screen, on Sunday, the 29th at 2 o'clock. That's this Sunday at 2 o'clock at the screen, which is in the campus of the University of Santa Fe Arts and Design.
Right, right. Yeah, that new title.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a real joy speaking with you, and good luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping I can get over there and say
I hope so too.
Yeah. Just real quickly, in about 15 seconds, can you characterize the film industry in New Mexico?
Hot.
Okay, good. That's excellent. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back with Amy Bustra talking about her documentary, Young Ancestors. Back. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and this is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. You can hear New Mexico Film Works streaming on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio by going to the santafe.com website and clicking on the live stream link. You can also hear this in previous shows on podcast by going to santafe.com and clicking on the podcast link. Look for the New Mexico Film Works link. I now have Amy Bustra with me in the studio. She's studied screenplay writing at Media Bistro under D.B. Gillies, a faculty member of New York University, Tisch School of Arts. She wrote the screenplay for the short film Have You Seen My Wife, which was filmed in Westchester County, New York. Ms. Bustra also produced and worked as assistant director on the film. The movie Young Ancestors, produced, written, and directed by Ms. Bustra, is her first documentary. Next up, she intends to produce and direct a narrative film, Bring Back That Day, based on her screenplay about a Native teenager and his estranged relationship with his non-Native father. Amy studied at St. John's College in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and graduated from Temple University of Philadelphia. She produced postgraduate studies at Sarah Lawrence College. Ms. Bustra lives in Santa Fe with her French husband, two teenage children, and their dog, Mesa. Welcome.
Thank you.
And first things first, what kind of dog is Mesa?
An Airedale Terrier.
Okay. We got to get these things, you know.
Very important.
Yeah. You've been making films for a short period of time.
Very short. I would say about 3 to 3.5 years.
And where does your interest come from in making films?
I would say the storyteller factor. I think storytelling is very, very important, and that film is a media in which we can do that. As important as it is as a visual media, I think it's also a way of connecting us as human beings through stories.
I keep hearing over and over again, if you're going to make a movie, tell a good story and make sure your story has an ending. It doesn't have to resolve, but it's got to have an ending.
Very true.
Yeah. So tell us about Young Ancestors. How did this project come about?
Well, I would say initially it came about by the fact I read an article written by Santa Fe Prep administrator, and the article announced the fact that these five teenagers from several different northern pueblos in New Mexico were going to be involved in the self-study program along with a mentor to learn their native Tewa language. And the minute I read that, there was something about that story that grabbed me. I said, this is a story of inspiration and hope, and it needs to be told.
Terrific. And so you contacted the school, and there was a person there that ended up producing the movie?
No, the first round was to contact the Indigenous Language Institute because the program came about through the Indigenous Language Institute in partnership with Puaque Pueblo. Mm-hmm. So I had to get the permission of Inés Slaughter, Felice Rivera, who's Director of Education for Puaque Pueblo, and then Jim Leonard, who is head of school at PrEP, because we ended up filming quite a lot at PrEP and doing a number of interviews. And then what happened was Laura Jagels, who is the mentor in the movie and also for a number of years was the seventh grade English teacher, or literature teacher at prep, came on board as a producer as well.
And making a documentary, and this is your first documentary,
yes.
What were the successes, what were the challenges in following people around with a camera and interviewing them?
I would say the successes, quite frankly, are the relationships I ended up developing with the people in the film.
Right.
I would say the challenges were the same for any first-time, kind of out of the starting gate, producer, director. And this may come across as rather facetious, but I think anybody who has managed a household from nuts to bolts, raised children, has probably about two-thirds of the skills necessary to produce a movie, if you want to know the truth.
I've heard similar comments about...
Have you?
Which is, hey, that's, you know, that's good background training and, you know, on-the-job training. And how did you go about selecting your crew?
Well, initially, I was traveling back and forth between New York and Santa Fe, so I had a contact here through St. John's College, Dave Marquez, who had done, I think, a Film Institute course here in editing. So I met with Dave and then started, you know, making contacts by coming out to Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. And we had some crew changes over the period of 2 years, which I think is normal because I find that most of the crew live rather gypsy lives. They go from project to project.
Sure.
But my main focus was to try and surround myself with people who knew more than I did so I could learn on the job. But I also found that doing this from a directorial point of view, a lot of it is instinct and common sense as well as the technical know-how.
Yeah. And is that kind of your sensibility in just setting up your shots as well? Like you just know this is the shot you want or the way it's going to look?
Well, I would say for that, I relied very heavily on my two DPs, Jason Jacks and Matthew Page. Mm-hmm. But what was helpful for me was that I had had a background in performing. I had done a lot of theater and took acting classes in college. I'd been a dance major and performed. So when I was in the actual one-on-one process of interviewing people or working with a group of people, I felt that those skills came to light rather easily.
We've had Matt Page on the show a couple of weeks ago. He gets around a lot.
Yes, he does.
You see his name around a lot. And mention your editor. She was there at the screening as well.
Yes. Shalene Bridge came on board post-production, and she did, I must say, a very, very admirable job. I cannot sing her praises enough. She took 200 hours of footage with a rough idea, a story idea that I'd had from the beginning of how I wanted it to play out. And she was able to put together what I think is a very beautiful film.
200 hours is a fair amount of footage to draw from. Did you have trouble deciding what you wanted in, what you had to cut out?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with that Hemingway, and it's not necessarily a quote, but a paraphrase where he talks about how when he was writing, what he left out was just as important. And that really came to bear to be true in this process. I almost think that I could make a second film with everything that's on the editing floor. I won't, of course. But ideally, with certain people who didn't make it in, like Jerry Hill, who was the president of the board of ILI, and Lucretia Williams, who works at Puyi Cliffs as a manager up there, I would love to take those interviews and make them available on the website at some point for people to hear.
Yeah, that's. I hadn't really occurred to me that you can take segments and put them up on YouTube and just expose people to the rest of or those pieces that didn't get into the film.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And how was it with the subjects? I know I was there for the filming and the Q&A. Somebody asked about learning the language and that it's rather a sacred thing to these folks and. So there were issues you have to deal with about like leaving the room when they were talking about certain aspects, or how did that work?
Well, what happened was, thanks to Laura, who really opened the door, I was allowed to sit in initially on some of the language lessons, not all of them, but some. I was not allowed to film, which I respect. I'm non-native. It's not my tradition. So when it came time to actually have that kind of footage, we relied on Rachel Nez, who had been working for ILI and was given permission to film because she is Native. And graciously, she gave us the footage that she had of the actual mentoring sessions. Mm-hmm. And then the kids did as well from some of their flip camps. But I was not allowed to film that, and I respect that. We all have our own traditions. Sure. And
how did the kids, how did they do in front of the camera?
I would have to say from a filmmaking point of view, from a director, producer, I lucked out. These kids, I think you met a few of them that evening. Right. They're engaging, they're enthusiastic, they're bright, and they're lovely individuals. So I lucked out.
Some subjects of another documentary said they all their friends just disappeared as soon as the cameras showed up. They didn't want to be in the camera. They didn't want to be near it, anything like that. So no problems with that? Yeah.
No, because I think very much this is the generation, you know, it's the age of my two children. Everybody is filming with their phones and their what have you, and they're used to it. So I think for that, it was a little bit less overwhelming for this generation.
And were surprises that you encountered?
Ask me a little bit more what you mean by that, Derek, please.
When I'm approaching a project, I kind of play it out in my mind. And you can't anticipate everything, but you know, there may have been one thing that kind of sticks out that really kind of caught you off guard.
Well, I would say I did not know going into this that this would be a 24/7 job for several years. So that caught me off guard, but happily engaged with the project. Anything else? I would say I got to know Bert Poley, who was then station manager down in Albuquerque, by phone before I ever met him, and he was lovely with me, very open, invited me to come down and meet him when I was traveling out to Santa Fe. And I was in New York one day, and I remember this very vividly, and I called him and I said, Bert, I will be there that day. And he said, well, I just want to make sure that you're really going to show up, because we've had a lot of people not do that. And I thought, what, not show up at the station? And I wasn't sure, so I asked him to clarify, and what he really referred to was the history of Native Americans under the American government and the history of their disappointment and deceit. And so that was an eye opener to me, having, grown up in an area where I didn't come across Native Americans on a daily basis. It made me much more sensitive to what I was dealing with.
Amy, it's a wonderful film. I'm glad I had an opportunity to see it, and I really appreciate you being a guest on the show. This is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be right back with John Armijo. Film Works, and we have John Armijo talking about part two of New Mexico films from the 1940s. Welcome, John.
Good to be here, man.
All right. What do you got for us?
Well, you're right. This is part two, and I'll begin with the musical The Desert Song. It was produced by Warner Brothers in 1943. Robert Flory, who directed the film and who was familiar with the North African desert where the story takes place, scouted several locations in California, Nevada, Utah, and Arizona, and chose Red Rock State Park as the most authentic match for the Moroccan desert. Filming at Red Rock State Park took about 25 days, and they had a crew that numbered in the range of 150 to 200 individuals that headquartered in Gallup. I have not seen The Desert Song, but I've been told it's not only an excellent film, but the Technicolor visuals alone are worth the price of admission. The cast included Dennis Morgan, Irene Manning, Gene Lockhart, Bruce Cabot, and Duncan Rinaldo. Bruce Cabot was born in Carlsbad, New Mexico in 1904. Duncan Rinaldo, also born in 1904, would later become the star of the 1950 hit TV series The Cisco Kid. Sudan, as you can tell by the title, takes place in Africa. In this case, Red Rock State Park doubles for the Sahara Desert. The film was originally released under the title Song of the Nile. Here's a partial review of the 1945 film that takes place in ancient Egypt. As usual, Maria Montez plays her rather ridiculous role in Sudan with the determined seriousness of a Lady Macbeth, which only adds to the giddy fun. Montez played the alluring beauty in distress in numerous Universal Pictures B films, and even though she wasn't the best actress or dancer or singer, audiences flocked to see her pictures. Dirk, here are two films that we did not know at Film Here until they were brought to our attention by film historians. Without Reservations, made in 1946, recently came to my attention via our friend and Western film historian Jeff Berg, who got the information from Sarah Kowalski, the film liaison for the city of Raton. I call this terrestrial string theory at its best. This was an RKO picture directed by Mervyn LeRoy and stars John Wayne, Claudette Colbert, and Don DeFore. And yes, the film was partially shot in Raton. The Hucksters also fell in my lap. Italian Western film historian Carlo Gabershack sent me a copy of the breakdown of the film as it appears in the American Film Institute catalog, where it states that the train sequence was filmed at the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad Station in Albuquerque. It also goes on to say that in 1947, it opened simultaneously in 1,000 theaters, making it the largest pre-release opening in film history. Take that, Avengers! The stellar cast included Clark Gable, Deborah Kerr, Sidney Greenstreet, and Ava Gardner, to name a few. The Grapes of Wrath filmed several scenes in Santa Rosa along Route 66 and at a gas station and at the coffee shop. Remember, gas stations back then had full service, and now they're called service stations service?
Yeah, I used to be one of those gas station service guys.
Well, now's when they ought to call them gas stations. I think it's those darn aliens. The only thing they do that makes sense to me is the cattle mutilations. You know, on their way to Earth, they probably hacked into our TV shows, and the first thing they want when they get here is a hamburger.
Makes sense, John.
You know, there's probably a holographic sign above Earth that says, last chance for food, next stop, 150,000 light years. Okay, enough of that. I always get an incredulous stare when I tell someone that the Flying Tigers shot an aerial sequence in the skies above Santa Fe. My guess is the producer craved red chili, or he had a girlfriend here. Here's another anomaly. Howard Hughes' iconic 1943 film, The Outlaw, starring Jane Russell, shot second-unit photography in Socorro. This is a no-brainer. Socorro grows excellent chili. The title of the 1947 film noir suspense thriller Ride the Pink Horse refers to one of the horses on an antique carousel that Universal Pictures paid the city of Taos $2,000 to use in the film. The carousel, built in 1882, is called Tivo Vivo, Lively Uncle, and it's been an annual attraction at the Taos Fiestas since 1939. And yes, it goes round and round. Exactly how much of the film was shot in Santa Fe is a bit sketchy, but Universal does acknowledge that portions of the film were indeed shot here. Some of the footage may have been second-unit photography to cover background atmosphere, but it does feature a fiesta-like atmosphere complete with zozobra. Robert Montgomery directed and starred in the film along with Wanda Hendricks and Thomas Gomez. The script was written by Ben Hecht and adapted for the screen from the novel by the same name, written by Santa Fe author Dorsey Hughes. Dirk, giddy up. In the early 1950s, Lash LaRue made an appearance at the annual Rough Riders Reunion and Rodeo in Las Vegas, New Mexico. And I got to ride on his TV horse, whose name was...
Wendy.
Bullwhip.
Bullwhip.
So there you go.
John, any idea how these couple of movies kind of fall through the cracks and didn't get recognized as being?
I haven't a clue. It happens all the time. You know, it's just one of those things. Someone wasn't paying attention.
All right. And is there we have part three tomorrow or next week?
Next week we have part three. You want to do it tomorrow? We can do it tomorrow.
Well, let's look. I'll give you some time.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
A few weeks ago, I was talking about the Albuquerque Trolley and their Breaking Bad tour. I mentioned some of the sites they visit, and one of those places I said was Polos Hermanos. Now, I know that's not the way you pronounce that. Actually, P-O-L-L-O-S is properly pronounced chicken. So I just want to send out my apologies for that to anybody that might have been listening. Also to mention, the Best of 48-Hour Film Project is showing Saturday night, this evening, if you're listening to this show streaming. They had some wonderful films submitted, and this is the best of them. So if you have a chance to make it, do so. And then, as Christina mentions, this Sunday, 2 o'clock, from Zimbabwe to Santa Fe, we'll be showing At the Screen. I suggest you check that out as well. You've been listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I've been your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back next week. Thank you so much for listening.